All right, we're starting the Zappa scene right now, Bert, and Roxy has the mic.
Yes, for example, we were looking into LaRouche, and they seem to see that everything is going down and very bad, and they're talking about the deindustrialization of societies, how the main industries, cities in all over the world are being destroyed, and cities like Chicago and some industrial parts of Germany, the industry has been taken somewhere else, and there was this meme that ecology, that the industry is destroying the world, the ecology, the people, that is bad, is polluted, and on the big picture of little men, things are really bad. But on the other side, we are on the other situation, the opposite, in which already in take today, McLuhan is talking about reprogramming the environment, and this idea seemed really extreme. How can man overcome what is happening and take the power to become the satellite conductors? Because he says the thing that is marking that we're taking our power back for McLuhan is the fact that we have satellites and the first nature and the second nature fusing one, and all the world became the audience. So before that, there was always like a priest conducting the mass, but he says when the whole world is the audience, the mass age, the mass age, it's the time where we have to become the satellite conductors that program the terrestrial and the galactic. And this demands total audience participation. And he says watching the Apollo was the biggest educational program in the magnetic city. And he proposes, because he's a teacher, he sees that the old Gutenberg galaxy that we still have as the main type of education is 19th century. This fragmentation and specialization is not helping the people to prefer to be in the situation of the satellite conductors of the Ecoland. And he's very precise in how he's saying everything is resonating now, and we have to make out of all this information overload, all this noise, to conduct it, to make sense out of it, and to save the situation, to get out of the vortex that he says this is accelerating every time with each thunder. And the satellite that goes outside the Earth, it's like a new level of vortex in the onion. So he has this proposal that to prepare you have to use dialogue.
Yep.
And study your environment, explore it, because the situation is changing so fast that the effect becomes the cause.
Yes.
So you cannot anticipate anymore, you cannot prepare anymore, because we don't even really know the changes that are coming, how, what is going to be needed. You may be studying economics and there is no more money, or something in politics, and everything is dissolving, since the dissolution of the Gulf is a process that has been going on, this dissolution. And LaRouche explains this with this secret societies. He thinks these people are doing these things on purpose, the synarchist.
Right.
That we talk about that with, when we talk about Bach.
Yes.
And the magic flute. How they always kept, always kept the population in a state of terror. To be the programmers of the environment. They control science and the education of people so that people themselves will be programmed to do what they wanted. And LaRouche proposes to go back to the classical model of education because he thinks that type of education teach people how to think, how to look for solutions and
how to create.
Find real, create real science, real art. But then you come and you overlay both McLuhan and LaRouche and you do your chart.
Right.
Because you see that they are both right, but it's not enough.
Right.
Really, to become the satellite conductor, you have to know how to do this pattern recognition, connect the dots, and consider things that were never considered. And LaRouche says the science that we know, a lot of it is false. A lot of studies are fake. Many things we think is real science, and for example, he says the hole in the ozone layer and the climate change, all this is a fraud. And he's amazed that the scientific community and many people that are educated accept all these frauds just because they're supposed to be true, proven by science.
Yeah.
But science is another illusion, another... So how to see through that? So we were discussing this topic that this is a Zappa concert where audience has to be active, and that's why I say last time it's a new type of mass, but as a meme, not as a religious thing, but as a way of taking your power and conduct, and that's what you do here and on Payday. You give everybody the chance to conduct the fasola.
Exactly. I'm going to try time this. This is that song, Call Invisible. I think we played it last week. Let's see if I can bring up the exact spot close to it. I got to make sure my sound is up here. Sound is up. Make sure the Skype button is off.
Where can I go to get my poodle clipped in Durban? Square's young person today. Ah, but it's a great time to be alive, ladies and gentlemen, and that's the theme of our program for tonight.
There it is. That's what we do here. It's fucking great to be alive, so let's just do that.
Our program for tonight. It's so fucking great to be alive is what the theme of our show is tonight, boys and girls. And I want to tell you, if there's anybody here who doesn't believe that it is fucking great to be alive, I wish they would go now because this show will bring them down so much.
All right. I wanted to find that. That was a little bit of Varezian dissonance in the search for it.
In the page 6 of Take Today, McLuhan writes, all experience is no longer relevant.
Right.
And man must now assure responsibility for the total programming of his planetary environment for new knowledge. And Ion comes and tells us all these things about Americas and your man, the blood, chemistry, and...
And the
how
atmosphere.
Things really work. But how to make sense of all these crazy...
And all the time he's telling us this stuff, he's saying, it's fucking great to be alive, Bert. That's the difference between Dobbstown and anybody else's school. Everybody's moping around. It's not great to be alive. This is the end times. This is horrible. This is depressing. The facts are getting worse and worse. And Bob is partying in a very sophisticated kind of part, not some decadent fucking, what, drunk, doping. No. We actually take heaven, and have it create the props for our party. That's what we do here. So that's pretty neat. Now, there's something I want to say about LaRouche. Is he talks about the continuous manifold and the discrete manifold. He also talks about the platonic solids. And he says that the sphere, the universe is bounded. It's a sphere, and within it is the different platonic solids. And that's part of the discrete manifold. But the surrounding envelope is a continuous manifold, and it's what Plato calls the good. Okay? The good surrounds everything. Everything adds up to the good in the end when you fully get the whole ecology. So it occurred to me yesterday, and I announced it to Carol, that LaRouche, what he means by the good that like contains the sphere, is non-physical. Plato was describing the non-physical environment because that's what holds humans together. Little man couldn't stand being fragmented. So they created an environment called non-physical that, you know, melded everybody's being through this ectoplasm or something that they would die into. So it was a big insight that LaRouche doesn't know it, but he is describing the good or the non-physical. Because in actual physical reality for the ascendant, there's no good or bad. There's no need to be connected to anybody. There's just constant creation. So that was a big insight for me. And, you know, on my chart, I use the theosophical categories in one thread so that McLuhan is the causal body, Thompson is the etheric body, Coker is the causal body, and LaRouche is the mental body. These are actual categories from theosophy. And LaRouche goes on about Plato pointed out the reality of the mental objects and that sense certainty wasn't something you should rely on. So the mental objects, so my category mental body applies to LaRouche, but guess what body I put in myself, in my quadrant? I put in physical body. How ionic can you get? I didn't go for the astral body or the etheric body or the mental body or the cosmic body. I was the physical body, the expanded, entombed, fucking great to be alive physical body. So this is where Zappa's music bypasses the concepts and percepts of LaRouche, McLuhan, and Thompson. It is Zappa's music which is the joy of ascension. He nails the joy of ascension, like our closing theme every week. Muffin Man. His music
is... This is the big allegory, because it's like this very complex piece. Everybody comes and has these threads and other ideas and brings new information. And there is like he's conducting all these rhythms,
yeah,
all this nonsense, all this noise.
Yeah.
And I all the time said the new environment is the new song.
Yes.
So from the, all this noise, this chaotic
right, and you know, Bert's a good example. He didn't know much about Zappa, but if you actually sort of just generally open-mindedly start looking into Zappa, a whole world of sound opens up that will shock you, of the huge
yes.
mountain that he has created of ear entertainment and probably other media if he had a chance. So you're an example of someone who has realized that those that dismiss Frank because he ate shit on stage or some silly rumor are really missing out the ascension. And, you know, I used to say out in Seattle to the Cosmic Awareness people, I said, Zappa is the last Rai. He's acting out musically the return of Rai to the plane of essence. So this is what Roxy seems to get, too. Zappa is your
yes,
person.
I was very impressed because in Take Today, McLuhan also starts with the music meme.
Yeah.
He says, a word alone has no meaning. It needs its ground, the language. The language, a note in isolation is not music.
Would you say
and,
a note is what?
A note in isolation is not music.
Right, right.
Because he says the meaning of meaning is relationship, echo sounding. And music is relationship between many different elements.
Mm. And he says objects are not observable.
We do.
Yeah, he says objects
yes.
are not observable. Only relationships, things not in isolation, are observable. So I want to read you a quote from LaRouche, which is the essence of McLuhan, the same point. And it's in a magazine, his academic magazine, Fidelio. And it says, subtitle of Fidelio, which he started 20 years ago, maybe in 1991, Journal of Poetry, Science, and Statecraft. And I carried this with me. I went to a place, it was a bit more public, and a guy looked at the title and he says, statecraft, what's that? They didn't know what statecraft was. I said, well, it's diplomacy, you know, international, it's what governments do with other governments. So here, so I was thinking about it. It's a journal of poetry, science, and statecraft. That's satellite conducting. Where you're the neophyte learning this stuff, and you're appreciating poetry, appreciating science, and statecraft. Exactly what Zappa did. He did poetry, he did science, and he ran for president. He took responsibility, right? Took responsibility being a creative person. Therefore, he has
yes.
to include
yes.
the potential of being president. So
because he wanted to conduct a bigger audience.
Right, that's right.
He practiced with his band and with his concerts, but then he wanted to program a bigger environment that just that.
That's right. Now, so in this article, which I sent to you, you can get it digitally, in this Fidelio, was the one called The Taoist Perversion of 20th Century Science. Now, many people learned about Zen Buddhism of the baby boomers in Generation X and thought it was cool, and they adapted to the Zen Buddhist ideas. Here is LaRouche saying the Zen Buddhist ideas are bad, and much of 20th century science is modeled on Zen Buddhist or Taoism. And LaRouche
yes, that
bad.
Was another thing that impresses me, because in Take Today, McLuhan talks about China and Taoism. And
yes.
in, like you said, they,
yes.
they talk about the same topics, the same people, but in total different ways.
That's right.
That's the wonderful thing that you
have noticed.
Don't, yeah, you don't limit yourself to this ideology or this.
Right.
You just
now, neither does LaRouche.
Different explorations.
Well, this okay, let's say I'm a person, I don't identify with any ideas. Okay, so other people start talking to me, and they're an average little people, so they got idea, they got ideologies. So what's my response? Well, I could take McLuhan's response and shift the dialogue to the dynamics of the environment that the guy who's telling his ideas doesn't notice. Or I can get in a bad mood like LaRouche and start yelling at the guy for stop being duped by ideologies. Two responses when people are talking ideologies to me, you know? You could be you, basically you say that's rhetorical by McLuhan. It's the mode of the open hand, whereas the dialectician is the closed fist. So LaRouche has the closed fist on the surface. Because you come to statements like this, I'm going to read you. So they're talking about Franz Capra, who did the Tao of Physics. Very popular book. Everybody's heard of it. You guys have heard it, right? The Tao of Physics? It's
yes.
You see it in a lot of New Age circles. And he's a physicist who did exactly what LaRouche said was already done by Niels Bohr and Schrodinger and all these guys that came out of the 1927 Copenhagen conference. Their agenda was to make Western metaphysics go Eastern. So along comes Fritjof Capra, sort of a baby boomer age, and replays these guys as if it's a new discovery. Now, I saw this book on McLuhan's desk in the last year or so before McLuhan passed on. So he was looking at the Tao of Physics. Now, it was written in Jack Sarfati's house. Also, it was funded by, I think, the Niels Bohr Foundation. Somebody funded this guy. LaRouche tells that. Let's see. He was a Berkeley professor. According to his own report, he worked closely with Werner Heisenberg, Neil Bohr's closest collaborator in the early 70s, who went over every chapter of his book. So this gang that comes out of the 1927 Taoist perversion of science got this understudy, Fritz Capra, to popularize his book. And he ends up running around as an environmentalist, which LaRouche thinks is the result of one being a dupe of Taoist science. He'll end up being an eco-fascist. But look at this. LaRouche says, ultimately, says Capra, this theory implies that, quote, the structures and phenomena we observe in nature are nothing but creations of our measuring and categorizing mind. All right, so our measuring and our categorizing mind, our Aristotelian mind, is creating the phenomena you observe. So then LaRouche corrects that. He says, this, of course, does not refer to the causal effect of new valid scientific discoveries by a human mind applied to the transformation of nature. The transformation of nature is what McLuhan says media do. They add to nature. They alter our images of nature. They become nature themselves. So here's LaRouche saying his key point that distinguishes his physics from Capra is that Capra doesn't understand that new scientific discoveries alter nature. I'll read it again. He says, I'll read this paragraph. Similarly, Capra draws out the parallels between Buddhism and Niels Bohr's view of the impossibility of knowledge. See, the Zen Buddhist plays down the mind's ability to create. So they just say we can't know. And the impossibility of knowledge is a result of man's role as both actor and observer in the universe. Capra quotes the Mahayana Buddhism master from the first century, a guy named Ashva Ghosha. Quote, all phenomena in the world are nothing but the illusory manifestation of the mind and have no reality on their own. Now, a lot of people will say that. The rock and roll songs with that idea. Everything's illusion and nothing is real. So his physics got to that point a long time ago. Capra, then LaRouche says, Capra is correct in asserting that this is the logical result of quantum theory in its most extreme form. So you do become an extreme Taoist and think everything's an illusion. Then LaRouche says, ultimately, says Capra, this theory implies, I quote, the structures and phenomena we observe in nature are nothing but creations of our measuring and categorizing mind, unquote. Then LaRouche, with this big McLuhan kind of statement, this, of course, does not refer to the causal effect of new valid scientific discoveries by a human mind applied to the transformation of nature. Following from Nicholas of Cusa, who brought up, was it you, Bert? Yeah, you brought up,
yes,
following,
yep.
He says, following Cusa, the tradition of Cusa, Kepler, and Leibniz, and then into LaRouche. And he describes what Capra's doing. He says, this is pure reductionist empiricism. The world is what we observe with our senses, which is where Bohr and quantum mechanics never departed from the empiricism of Newton. And thus, reality is only in our minds. This is most clearly demonstrated by Niels Bohr's argument that the uncertainty involved in man's efforts to measure the location or momentum of an atomic particle is not simply a problem in our method of observation, but is an uncertainty in nature itself. No proof is offered, simply the Aristotelian and Buddhist assertion that the perception of the shadows on the wall of Plato's cave is all that is real. So, LaRouche is trying to say something else, like McLuhan is trying to say something else, look at how our technologies change reality and add to nature, which is one of the first statements Ion made way back there in our first recordings. He talked about Elvis added new nature to the universe. So I just wanted to point out that LaRouche is saying McLuhan's same point, that technologies alter and create new nature. Now, how do you respond to that? It's where you get the differences. You get Thompson's response, and Thompson's response is called hesychasm in the LaRouche world. Hesychasm is the meditative, mystic, what else, meditation, yoga, retreating from the world and developing your own silence. And this is mastered or controlled by Mount Athos, A-T-H-O-S, in Greece, off a peninsula in the Adriatic Sea, I think it is, or the other sea. There's two seas around Greece. So Mount Athos, which you would never hear about, unless you read LaRouche, you wouldn't know about Mount Athos, and it's called hesychasm. H-E-S-Y-C-H-A-S. Hesychastic, or hesychasm, different adjectival variations. But that's the word that if you haven't read LaRouche, you would never heard of. It's like you learn the word Hyndiades from McLuhan. So the very thing that people think is what enlightenment is about, retreating, becoming a yogi master, seeing everything's illusion, is the point. Refuted by McLuhan and LaRouche and Thompson slightly. So you get possible responses are McLuhan says the realities you think are an illusion are actually very profound and are altering and creating new realities, which make older realities seem a delusion. And then LaRouche, he hears somebody talking the crap and he gets mad and says he's going to, what would he say, he's going to take over that guy's political party and become president. That's LaRouche's threat. You want to walk around with that attitude? I will take over your White House and make it different. And then Thompson says, no, I'm going to meditate my way out of this mess. But McLuhan said something that's a bit different, so I'm also going to look at McLuhan and see if my meditation leads nowhere. Then Croker says, sorry, boys, we ain't here anymore. Machines took over. The machines are miming all these processes, and you best go home and do a sex change or something. He actually has a sex change person on the cover of one of his books. Who became a performance artist? And then Bob says, "No problem. It's fucking great to be alive," and promptly forgets everything he's learned. But
and Zappa says, "Dance me this, disco boy."
Yeah, that's right. "Dance me this, disco boy." So what does Zappa say? Well, just repeat that for a second. I think I can just go like this, right? Move it back a bit and see if I get it. Oh, wait a minute. I turned the sound off, didn't I? Okay, sound up. You hear that noise? That's the static.
Go now, because this show will bring them down so much. God bless America! It's so fucking great to be alive, is what the theme of our show is tonight, boys and girls. And I want to tell you, if there's anybody here who doesn't believe that it is fucking great to be alive, I wish they would go now, because this show will bring them down so much.
go. Are we having fun?
Of the environment in us, and we create the environment with the words and the different technologies. But this interaction is really interesting. How does this really work?
The cognitive process.
Yes, and the words really making the things become.
Right,
and, the conduction in three kingdoms is not only the outside kingdom.
Right. Now, I just said we're here to feel and act out that it's fucking great to be alive. So someone could say, Bob's just a rock and roller. He's just a fucking irresponsible guy who, because the technology allows him to avoid every issue, he doesn't have to worry about politics or anything. He can live in a whole environment separated by himself. He can party day in and day out. But here's the point. What does Bob do to be fucking great to be alive? He kills heaven and brings heaven forth to join the party. The heaven is the party everybody's dying to go to. Bob brings the heaven party to us, and that heaven begins to mock everybody and has a lot of fun, right? Ion has the attitude, it's fucking great to be alive. That's his attitude all the time.
Yeah.
And then what does Frank say? If you want to have fun, you have to call a vegetable. Now, what does that mean, to call any vegetable? What do I become vegetarian? Is it a put-down of fellow humans and exploit a dummy? Call any vegetable, and the chances are good. So this is what's different. We are not responding in a cliche manner here. We even probe what it means to say it's fucking great to be alive. We probe that, not an ideology. So it's the same question you're asking, Roxy. Who are the brain police? That's the question. What are the McLuhan announced in Playboy interview that he had figured out the identity of the process of cognition and creation. And LaRouche has the same statement. He says he's claimed he knows how to explain cognition and the creative process. They're both claiming, from a new perspective, the processes of the chemical body.
Yes, but the repercussions, the echoing,
yes,
goes beyond what we call a creation, or, like, for example, making a theory or composing, making art. It
right.
goes into the do-it-yourself environment
in
for
the sphere. Now, Roxy, here's the interesting thing. Another similarity is McLuhan makes a lot out of the pyramid, the triangle, the organization chart, the bureaucracy, the vertical symbolism is subsumed by the sphere. Acoustic space is spherical. So McLuhan is saying it is important to understand how the world is now a sphere and not so much the pyramid. So when Ion first suggested our symbol for our website way back in 2009, he wanted to put a fucking pyramid there. So I'm thinking, this fucking Ion is old-fashioned. He's trying to create a new elitism, a new bureaucracy. And so I wasn't happy with the fact he was insisting on the pyramid until he showed us what it would look like. And there was the pyramid, but the top was shaved off, and there was a nice sphere on top of it, you know, the capstone. So I backed off of my objection to it because at least he had a bit of sphere there, and it's the important part, apparently, the sphere. So it's interesting that he's got the pyramid, he's Zappa conducting the band, they got to rehearse, he's got a bit of bureaucracy, a bit of fascism, a bit of dictatorship, right? But it's spherical and allows everybody to contribute at different times in an uncontrolled manner, or an individualist making their own space. So the two things, pyramid and sphere, go together in Zappa, in McLuhan, and in LaRouche. Because LaRouche takes the sphere and then shows how Kepler, or traditional, it's called synthetic geometry, breaks apart the sphere or shows the different angles inside that create the different platonic solids. So isn't it interesting how these guys have the same thing? Now I can show you things in Thompson. Thompson goes on about the hypersphere. They're all basically looking at the same phenomenon, which I pronounce the Android meme, and it's a simulation that they're analyzing, and that McLuhan, LaRouche, and Thompson, and Zappa are all extensions of the Android meme themselves. And they usually include that. LaRouche, not so much. I don't think LaRouche would go that far, but he represents an older school. But and Coker goes to it on the other side, very extreme. But yeah. The whole thing... You said, you start off, Roxy, saying, more and more the little man's really getting depressed by the Android meme. Remember you said that? The Android meme is bumming everybody out. What they perceive is the Android meme, or what they perceive their environment is. Did you get knocked off, Roxy? Let's see. No, you're not in that environment. So, where are you? I think you got knocked off. Yeah, maybe. Did you come in like this? Who's this? I don't think that's Roxy. Oh,
Skype.
Wait a minute.
She's on Skype. It's weird. It's really strange. Because I was on when you tried to call me earlier and you couldn't hear me.
Wait a minute. What time is it?
Maybe.
And she's... No. Let me play a Zappa song, and I'll try to get her back in, okay? So,
right.
What? This is one, Canadian Customs by Frank Zappa. Okay, this is from a band, an album called Guitar Live. I can't remember it, but could be interesting. Canadian Customs. So here we go. Oh, wait a minute. I got to fix that. Noise factor. Okay, you there, Roxy?
Yeah.
Okay, are you there, Bert?
Yes.
Now, the that was Frank Zappa from an album called Guitar, released in the early 80s, recording of a performance live and concert called Canadian Customs. So, so Roxy missed what I was saying. I'm saying the chart is a picture of the Android meme and all its contents. So we say, we like to say in McLuhan land that history ended in 1945 with the exclamation point, the atomic bomb. So after that's a simulation. But it's almost like the human could say to the machines, the Jesus Christ version of human says, well, go forth, technology, you will do greater works than us. So the Android meme replays a lot of what happened before World War II. And Zappa McLuhan, you know, Zappa redoes Wyndham Lewis, and McLuhan does Lewis, and I have Maybrus and LaRouche redo Ezra Pound, Thompson does Eliot, Croker does Yeats, and I do Joyce. So the Android meme does it better. You know, anything that Frank has done is way better than Verez or anybody in his field. So the Android meme makes things better. But you start off saying, Roxy, that the Android meme is depressing the little man, or the little man's in big trouble because the Android meme's in trouble. I'm not sure how you put it. But within that, you've got the Android meme saying it's fucking great to be alive. Now, you can look at Zappa. He had the opportunity in entertainment to exhibit the detached view, the detached and involved being of recognizing all kinds of different thoughts, schools of perception, and talking back to them, like we do as Tetrad managers, and what Roxy's saying I do. And what LaRouche attempts to do, and McLuhan attempts, they try to have the creative detachment. Creative and producing, participating, but also not fooled by sense certainty. So you are open. The mic is open for you to compliment what I said. Complete.
Yes.
Complete.
Yes, because most people now presume are consuming and producing, liking, sharing, commenting, but that is not real homily.
Real homily. Now, there's an obscure word. How's your homily, Bert?
Because
working on
the homily means in Greek, the intercourse with words,
yeah.
With dialogue.
Yeah. Now I want to read something. I was planning to do this, but we're going to have a short version. So Dave Wally did one of the – they say he died a few years ago. He's born around 1945 or 46, and he got an obituary in New York Times. He wasn't that famous, but they gave him one because he apparently wrote the first rock biography. I don't know what was written on the Beatles or whatever before that, but – he did it, and he did it on Zappa. So the first Zappa did the first in so many things. So it's appropriate that a book on him was the first rock biography, right? So I want you. So when a couple years before he put out the book in 71, and I got to read the manuscript just before it came out because he was having a fight with Frank, and I had gone down to New York to see 200 Motel. So I stayed at Dave Wally's, and he complained to me about his problem with Frank. But 2 years before, when Zappa broke up the Mothers, he wrote an article on it for Jazz and Pop magazine, whose editor is in the movie On the Doors. What's her name? Pauline something. She was Jim Morrison's other girlfriend, the one presented as a witch in the movie by Oliver Stone, On the Doors. You guys know what I'm referring to? Did you ever see that movie?
Yes.
Yeah, well, the witch was the editor of Jazz and Pop magazine. And she, David, who had come out of university, Yale or someplace, she recognized his chops as a music critic, and nobody was really writing about Frank seriously in 67, 68, 69, but David Wally was given a form in Jazz and Pop magazine. And I remember one time I was with him in 1971, and maybe it was that time in November 71, and he was going to dinner with Pauline, or whatever her name is, and Jim Morrison. And he said, Bob, I'd like to come along, but we're not allowed to let anybody know we're meeting with Jim Morrison. You know, Morrison will not tolerate any strangers entering in his little private restaurant dues or wherever he gets together with people. So Dave was, he had access to Jim Morrison through Pauline. Now I'm just going to look up her name just to get it for the record, what her name was, because she's an interesting person. And Dave Wally lucked out meeting her and then getting to write for Jazz and Pop. So I would read Jazz and Pop, you know, all through the late 60s, early 70s, because Dave would write about Zappa. So I want to read, get into the record, what did he write when Frank breaks up the Mothers, which is, you know, probably pretty upsetting to him. Let's see, Jazz Pop. How do we find Jazz and Pop? Jazz and Pop magazine. Pauline, was it Pauline? See if that comes up. Yeah, I guess it's Pauline Ravelli. Let's see, Jazz and Pop magazine. Do they do a Wikipedia on it? Jazz and Pop.
Another idea I wanted to say before we go on.
Right.
About the homily is that real homily is what you do with Diane, because it's the coitus that brings some fruit. It has really an effect in at all levels in the environment.
Right.
It's not just talking, but it really has an effect. It's real coitus. It has the reproduces many things.
Yes. Yeah. I agree. I'm assuming it's Pauline Ravelli. And now, I should put in Pauline Ravelli, and then Jim Morrison should come up. Should be connected to her. I'm just going to see if that comes up. Unless there's another Pauline that was with her. Her best-selling memoir. Okay, conversation with, oh yeah, I know her as Patricia Keneally. And so she's Patricia Keneally Morrison. And it says she was one of the first female rock critics and journalists, having begun her career in the 1960s. Along with her own work, Patricia was also the wife of the rock legend Jim Morrison. Her best-selling memoir, Strange Days, My Life With and Without Jim Morrison, commemorates their life together and love for one another. It's one of the most candid and definitive books on Jim Morrison. Now look at this. Now, Patricia is a full-blown witch. In 1990, Patricia was knighted as a Dame Templar. What do you think of that, Roxy? At Rosslyn Chapel. That's the chapel they write about Holy Blood, Holy Grail. An initiate of the Supremist Militaris Templi Hierosolimitani. She is a historian and archivist of Celtic traditions as well as a high priestess. She was one of the first women in the U.S. to boldly and publicly acknowledge that she practiced witchcraft during a time when feminism was barely in its second wave. Now, let's just see. So then they have an interview with her. We'll have to do that. In 1967, she said, I saw a copy of Jazz and Pop magazine on the newsstand in the Midtown office building where I worked for Macmillan Publishing, writing a kid's dictionary. It was full of stories about the new progressive rock I'd been crazy about for several years, and I fell in love with the magazine immediately. So I wrote to the editor and publisher, Pauline Ravelli. So she's not Pauline Ravelli. She's something else. And asked if there might be a job there for me. She called me about 2 months later, and I began as editorial assistant. Oh, so she becomes editor. So she does rise up in the magazine. So there's two Paulines there. Patricia Keneally and Pauline Ravelli. Two P's. And Pauline Ravelli, and so she becomes editor at the end of 1968. She says, best job in the world. You know, you get to go to all the rock concerts at the end of the 60s and jazz stuff. She says, I got to meet pretty much everyone but the Rolling Stones, in brackets, who cares, including all my really, truly favorites like Jefferson Airplane and the Doors and Janis Joplin. It was a four-color slick magazine published entirely by women, four of us, for a readership about 80% male. I'd say we did a pretty, that's interesting, I didn't know that. I'd say we did a pretty good job. Sometimes the old Marxist jazzbos on staff, that'd be like Frankowski, does that long interview with Zappa, Mayo, gave me a hard time for editing them not to their liking. But hey, I was the editor, not them. So these old Mayo guys were edited by a woman. That must have been shocking. It was a difficult time for women, but I had very little difficulty. Maybe because I gave off a vibe of mess with me and I will end you. But the only real unpleasantness was the time backstage at the Fillmore East before Led Zeppelin's debut when Robert Plant called across the dressing room, hey, you in the lace nightie, get over here and sit on my face. She says, I was wearing my lace tablecloth, Joplin-style lace pantsuit, and I declined his offer in no uncertain terms. I mean, we'd had dinner together, all five of us, plus manager and publicist, the night before, and he'd been fine as we discussed all sorts of things. From Aleister Crowley to J.R.R. Tolkien. Besides, I had a much better rock and roll star's face to sit on. That would be David Bowie. After Jazz and Pop and Jim's death, I went to work for RCA Records as an advertising copywriter. Now, when I connected up in the Berkshires, he had some paintings and stuff from her, from Pat Keneally. So that's an interesting side point. Why are we talking about? Why did I go into that? What brought this up?
Well, this article. Because McLuhan says the Gutenberg galaxy retrieved the Renaissance, but the electric environment retrieved the occult.
Yes.
Because that's the born of the Mr. Landscape now.
That's
the
right.
The real green landscape.
Now listen to this. So here's the thing. Pauline Ravelli and Pat Keneally and two other women edited people like Frank Kosky and Dave Wally. And so they're putting out the best articles on Zappa, along with Barry Miles' articles in International Times magazine in London. We read some of his stuff. So this is around the same time as that article that we read a few weeks ago in the International Times where he's interviewing Zappa, summer of 69, about those riots in Germany and his speech at the London School of Economics and the archetypes used in Reuben and the Jets, that album. You know, Barry Miles is doing a good, an appreciative intellectual response to Zappa. Well, Dave Wally, take Barry Miles, who gets disillusioned with Zappa and writes a biography almost 40 years later of Zappa, a kind of snarky biography, but it's dedicated to David Wally. And David Wally is bitter about his relationship with Zappa, so this is the bitter school of the Zappa land. But they did good work in the early days, so what is Dave Wally going to write? We got half an hour. What's Dave Wally going to write about Zappa when the shock of his life is that Zappa stopped a band that Dave Wally's promoting? You know what I mean? So what's Dave Wally going to say? So, it's titled, anything you guys want to say? Bert, are you here, Bert, still?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm listening.
Anything you want to say, Rocky, before I take over?
Well, how, in a way, Payday, it's like a Zappa concert because...
in its variety.
You have the DJ Bob.
DJ, in its variety.